What was in that thing?
But of course, she don't say nothing.
Todd Hewitt?
I hear from across the canyon. I look up. It's the mayor shouting his first words ever to me in person through sheets of smoke and heat that make him look all wavy.
We're not finished, young Todd.
He calls over the crackle of the burning bridge and the roar of the water below.
Not by a long way.
And he's calm and still ruddy clean and looking like there's no way he's not going to get what he wants. I stand up, hold out my arm and give him two fingers, but he's already disappearing behind big clouds of smoke. I cough and spit blood again.
We gotta keep moving,
I say, coughing some more.
Maybe they'll turn back. Maybe there's no other way across, but we shouldn't wait to find out.
I see the knife in the dust. Shame comes real quick, like a new pain all its own. The things I said. I reach down and pick it up and put it back in its sheath. The girl's still got her head down, coughing to herself. I pick up her bag and hold it out for her to take.
Come on,
I say.
We can at least get away from the smoke.
She looks up at me. I look back at her. My face burns, and not from the heat.
I'm sorry.
I look away from her, from her eyes and face blank and quiet as ever. I turn back up the path.
Viola,
I hear. I spin around, look at her.
What?
I say. She's looking back at me. She's opening her mouth. She's talking.
My name,
she says.
It's Viola.
Part 3. 13. Across the bridge. I don't say nothing to this for a minute. Neither does she. The fire burns, the smoke rises, Manchie's tongue hangs out in a stunned pant till finally I say,
Viola.
She nods.
Viola,
I say again. She don't nod this time.
I'm Todd,
I say.
I know,
she says. She's not quite meeting my eye.
So you can talk then?
I say, but all she does is look at me again quickly, and then away. I turn to the still burning bridge, to the smoke turning into a fog bank twixt us and the other side of the river, which I don't know if it makes me feel safer or not, if not seeing the mayor and his men is better than seeing them.
That was,
I start to say, but she's getting up and holding out her hand for a bag. I realize I'm still holding it. I hand it to her and she takes it.
We should go on,
she says,
away from here.
Her accent's funny. Different from mine. Different from anyone in Prentice towns. Her lips make different kinds of outlines for the letters, like they're swooping down on them from above, pushing them into shape, telling them what to say. In Prentice town, everyone talks like they're sneaking up on their words, ready to club them from behind. Manchie's just in awe of her.
Away,
he says lowly, staring up at her like she's made of food. There's this moment now where it feels like I could start asking her stuff. Like, now that she's talking, I could just hit her with every asking I can think of about who she is, where she's from, what happened, and them askings are all over my noise, flying at her like pellets. But there's so much stuff wanting to come out of my mouth that nothing is, and so my mouth don't move. And she's holding her bag over her shoulder and looking at the ground, and then she's walking past me, past Manchie, on up the trail.
Hey,
I say. She stops and turns back.
Wait for me,
I say. I pick up my rucksack, hooking it back over my shoulders. I press my hand against the knife in its sheath against my lower back. I make the rucksack comfortable with a shrug, say,
come on, Manchie,
and off we go up the trail, following the girl. On this side of the river, the path makes a slow turn away from the cliffside, heading into what looks like a landscape of scrub and brush, making its way around and away from the larger mountain, looming up at us on the left. At the place where the trail turns, we both stop and look back without saying that we're gonna. The bridge is still burning like you wouldn't believe, hanging on the opposite cliff like a waterfall on fire, flames having leaped up the entire length of it, angry and greenish-yellow. The smoke's so thick, it's still impossible to tell what the mayor and his men are doing, have done, if they're gone or waiting or what. There could be a whisper of noise coming through, but there could also not be a whisper of noise, what with the fire blazing and the wood popping and the white water below. As we watch, the fire finishes its business on the stakes on the other side of the river, and with a great snap, the burning bridge falls, 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 clattering against the cliffside, splashing into the river, sending up more clouds of smoke and steam, making everything even foggier. "What was in that box?" I say to the girl. She looks at me, opens her mouth, but then closes it again, turning away. "It's okay," I say. "I'm not gonna hurt you." She looks at me again, and my noise is full of just a few minutes ago when I was just about to hurt her. When I was just about to... Anyway. We don't say no more. She turns back onto the path, and me and Manchi follow her into the scrub. Knowing she can speak don't help with the silence none. Knowing she's got words in her head don't mean nothing if you can only hear 'em when she talks. Looking at the back of her head as she's walking, I still feel my heart pull toward her silence. Still feel like I've lost something terrible, something so sad I want to weep. "Weep!" Manchi barks. The back of her head just keeps on walking. The path is still pretty wide. Wide enough for horses, but the terrain around us is getting rockier, the path twistier. We can hear the river down below us to our right now, but it feels like we're tending away from it a bit, getting ourselves deep into an area that feels almost walled, rock face sometimes coming up on both sides, like we're walking at the bottom of a box. Little prickly firs grow out of every crevice, and yellow vines with thorns wrapping themselves around the firs' trunks, and you can see and hear yellow razor lizards hissing at us as we pass. "Bite!" they say as a threat. "Bite! Bite!" Anything you might want to touch here would cut you. After maybe 20-30 minutes, the path gets to a place where it widens out, where a few real trees start growing again, where the forest looks like it might be about to restart, where there's grass and stones low enough for sitting on, which is what we do, sit. I take some dried mutton out of my rucksack and use the knife to cut strips for me, for Manchi, and for the girl. She takes them without saying anything, and we sit quietly apart and eat for a minute. I am Todd Hewitt, I think, closing my eyes and chewing, embarrassed for my noise now, now that I know she can hear it, now that I know she can think about it. Think about it in secret. I am Todd Hewitt. I will be a man in 29 days' time. Which is true, I realize, opening my eyes. Time goes on, even when you're not looking. I take another bite. I ain't never heard the name Viola before, I say after a while, looking only at the ground, only at my strip of mutton. She don't say nothing, so I glance up in spite of myself, to find her looking back at me. What? I say.
Your face,
she says. I frown. What about my face? She makes both of her hands into fists and mimes punching herself with them. I feel myself redden. Yeah, well.
And from before, she says. From...
She stops. Aaron, I say. Aaron! Manchi barks. And the girl flinches a little.
That was his name, she says. Wasn't it?
I nod, chewing on my mutton. Yep, I say. That's his name.
He never said it out loud, but I knew what it was.
Welcome to New World. I take another bite, having to tear an extra chewy bit off with my teeth, which catches one sore spot among many in my mouth. Ow! I spit out the bit of mutton and a whole lot of extra blood. The girl watches me spit, and then sets down her food. She picks up her bag, opens it, and finds a little blue box slightly larger than the green campfire one. She presses a button on the front to open it and takes out what looks like a white plastic cloth and a little metal scalpel. She gets up from her rock and walks over to me with them. I'm still sitting, but I lean back when she brings her hands to my face.
Bandages,
she says. I've got my own.
These are better.
I lean back farther. You're... I say, blowing out air through my nose. You're quiet, kind of... I shake my head a little.
Bothers you?
Yes.
I know,
she says.
Hold still.
She looks closer at the area around my swollen eye and then cuts off a piece of bandage with a little scalpel. She's about to put it over my eye, but I can't help it, and I move back from her touch. She don't say nothing, just keeps her hands up like she's waiting. I take a deep breath, close my eyes, and offer up my face. I feel the bandage touch the swollen area, and immediately it gets cooler. Immediately the pain starts to edge back, like it's all being swept away by feathers. She puts another one on a cut I have at my hairline, and her fingers brush my face as she puts another one just below my lower lip. It all feels so good, I haven't even opened my eyes yet.
I don't have anything for your teeth,
she says.
It's okay,
I say, almost whispering it.
Man, these are better than mine. They're partially alive,
she says.
Synthetic human tissue. When you're healed, they die.
Uh-huh, I say, acting like I might know what that means. There's a longer silence, long enough to make me open my eyes again. She stepped back, back to a rock she can sit down on, watching me, watching my face. We wait, 'cause it seems like we should. And we should, 'cause after a little bit of waiting, she begins to talk.
We crashed.
She starts quietly, looking away. Then she clears her throat and says it again.
We crashed. There was a fire and we were flying low, and we thought we'd be okay, but something went wrong with the safety flumes and...
She holds open her hands to explain what follows the and.
We crashed.
She stops.
Was that your ma and pa?
I ask after a bit. But she just looks up into the sky, blue and spare, with clouds that look like bones.
And when the sun came up,
she says,
that man came.
Aaron.
And it was so weird. He would shout and he would scream, and then he'd leave. And I'd try to run away.
She folds her arms.
I kept trying so he wouldn't find me. But I was going in circles, and wherever I hid, there he'd be. I don't know how, until I found these sort of hut things.
The spackle buildings, I say, but she ain't really listening.
She looks at me. Then you came.
She looks at Manchi.
You and your dog that talks.
Manchi! Manchi barks. Her face is pale. And when she meets my eyes again, her own have gone wet.
What is this place?
She asks, her voice kind of thick.
Why do the animals talk? Why do I hear your voice when your mouth isn't moving? Why do I hear your voice a whole bunch over, piled on top of each other like there's 9 million of you talking at once? Why do I see pictures of other things when I look at you? Why could I see what that man...
She fades off. She draws her knees up to her chest and hugs them. I feel like I better start talking real quick or she's gonna start rocking again.
We're settlers,
I say. She looks up at this, still hugging her knees, but at least not rocking.
We were settlers,
I continue. Landed here to found New World about 20 years ago or so. But there were aliens here, the Spackle, and didn't want us. I'm telling her what every boy in Prentice Town knows, the history even the dumbest farm boy like yours truly knows by heart. Men tried for years to make peace, but the Spackle weren't having it, and so war started. She looks down again at the word war. I keep talking. And the way the Spackle fought, see, was with germs, with diseases. That was their weapons. They released germs that did things. One of them, we think, was meant to kill all our livestock, but instead it just made every animal able to talk. I look at Manchie, which ain't as much fun as it sounds. I look back at the girl. And another was the noise. I wait. She don't say nothing, but we both sort of know what's coming, 'cause we've been here before, ain't we? I take a deep breath. And that one killed half the men and all the women, including my ma. And it made the thoughts of the men who survived no longer secret to the rest of the world. She hides her chin behind her knees.
Sometimes I can hear it clearly, she says. Sometimes I can tell exactly what you're thinking, but only sometimes. Most of the time it's just
noise, I say. She nods.
And the aliens?
There ain't no more aliens. She nods again. We sit for a minute, ignoring the obvious till it can't be ignored no longer.
Am I going to die?
She asks quietly.
Is it going to kill me?
The words sound different in her accent, but they mean the same damn thing, and my noise can only say, probably. But I make it so my mouth says, I don't know. She watches me for more. I really don't know, I say, kind of meaning it. If you'd asked me last week, I'd have been sure, but today... I look down at my rucksack, at the book hiding inside.
I don't know.
I look back at her.
I hope not.
But probably, says my noise, probably you're gonna die. And though I try to cover it up with other noise, it's such an unfair thing, it's hard not to have it right at the front.
I'm sorry, I say.
She don't say nothing.
But maybe if we get to the next settlement...
I say, but I don't finish, 'cause I don't know the answer.
You ain't sick yet.
That's something.
You must warn them,
she says, down into her knees. I look up sharply.
What?
Earlier, when you were trying to read that book...
I wasn't trying, I say, my voice a little bit louder all of a sudden.
I could see the words in your whatever...
she says,
and it's, you must warn them.
I know that. I know what it says.
Of course it's Ruddy, you must warn them.
Of course it is, idiot. The girl says,
it seemed like you were...
I know how to read.
She holds up her hands. Okay.
I do.
I'm just saying.
Well, stop just saying. I frown, my noise roiling enough to get Manchie on his feet. I get to my feet as well. I pick up the rucksack and put it back on. We should get moving.
Warn who?
Asks the girl, still sitting.
About what?
I don't get to answer, even though I don't know the answer, 'cause there's a loud click above us, a loud, clangy click that in Prentice Town would mean one thing. A rifle being cocked. And standing on a rock above us, there's someone with a freshly cocked rifle in both hands, looking down the sight, pointing it right at us. What's foremost in my mind at this particular juncture, says a voice rising from behind the gun, is what do two little pups think they're doing a-burning down my bridge? 14. The wrong end of a gun.
Gun! Gun! Gun!
Manchie starts barking, hopping back and forth in the dust. I'd quiet down your beastie there, says the rifle. his face obscured by looking down the sight straight at us. "Wouldn't want anything to happen to it now, would you?"
"Quiet, Manchie,"
I say. He turns to me.
"Gun, Todd?"
he barks.
"Bang! Bang!"
"I know! Shut up!" He stops barking, and it's quiet. Aside from my noise, it's quiet. "I do believe I sent out an asking to a particular pair of pups," says the voice, "and I'm a-waiting on my answer." I look back at the girl. She shrugs her shoulders, though I notice we both have our hands up.
"What?"
I say back up to the rifle. The rifle gives an angry grunt. "I'm asking," it says, "what exactly gives ye permission to go a-burning down other people's bridges?" I don't say nothing. Neither does the girl. "Do you think this is a stick I'm a-pointing at you?" The rifle bobs up and down once.
"We were being chased,"
I say, for lack of nothing else. "Chased, were ye?" says the rifle. "Who was a-chasing ye?" And I don't know how to answer this. Would the truth be more dangerous than a lie? Is the rifle on the side of the mayor? Would we be bounty? Or would the rifle have even heard of Prentistown? The world's a dangerous place when you don't know enough. Like, why is it so quiet? "Oh, I heard of Prentistown, all right," says the rifle, reading my noise with unnerving clarity and cocking the gun again, making it ready to shoot. "And if that's where you're from..." Then the girl speaks up and says that thing that suddenly makes me think of her as Viola and not the girl anymore.
"He saved my life."
"I saved her life," says Viola. Funny how that works. "Did he now?" says the rifle. "And how do you know he don't aim to just be a saving it for himself?" The girl, Viola, looks at me, her forehead creased. It's my turn to shrug. "But no." The rifle's voice changes. "No. Uh-uh. No, I'm not a-seeing that in ye, am I, boy? 'Cause you're just a boy pup still, ain't ye?" I swallow. "I'll be a man in 29 days. "Not something to be proud of, pup. Not where you're from." And then he lowers the gun away from his face. And that's why it's so quiet. He's a woman. He's a grown woman. He's an old woman. "I thank ye kindly to call me she," the woman says, still pointing the rifle at us from chest level. "And not so old I won't still shoot ye." She's looking at us more closely now, reading me up and down, seeing right into my noise with a skill I've only ever felt in Ben. Her face is making all kinds of shapes, like she's considering me. Like Killian's face does when he tries to read me to see if I'm lying. Though this woman ain't got no noise at all, so she might be singing a song in there for all I know. She turns to Viola and pauses for another long look. "As pups go," she says, looking back at me, "ye are as easy to read as a newborn, me boy." She turns her face to Viola. "But ye, wee girl, your story is not a usual one, is it?"
"I'd be happy to tell you all about it if you'd stop pointing a gun at us," Viola says.
This is so surprising, even Manchie looks up. I turn to Viola with my mouth open. We hear a chuckle from up on the rock. The old woman is laughing to herself. Her clothes seem like real dusty leather, worn and creased for years and years with a rimmed hat and boots for ignoring mud, like she ain't nothing more than a farmer, really. She's still pointing the gun at us, though. "Ye were a-running from Prentistown, were ye?" she asks, looking into my noise again. "There's no point in hiding it, so I go ahead and put forward what we were running from. What happened at the bridge? Who was chasing us?" She sees all of it. I know she does. But all I see her do is wrinkle up her lips and squint her eyes a bit. "Well, now," she says, crooking the rifle in her arm and starting to make her way down from the rocks to where we're standing. "I can't rightly say that I'm not peeved about ye blowing up my bridge. Heard the boom all the way back at the farm. Oh, yeah." She steps off the last rock and stands a little ways away from us, the force of her grown-up quiet so large I feel myself stepping back without even knowing I decided to do it. "But the only place it led to ain't been worth a going to for a decade no more. Only left it up out of hope." She looks us over again. "Who's to say I weren't right?" We still have our hands in the air, 'cause she ain't making much sense, is she? "I'll ask ye this once," the woman says, lifting the rifle again. "Am I gonna need this?" I exchange a glance with Viola.
"No," I say. "No, ma'am,"
Viola says. "Ma'am," I think.
"It's like sir, Bonnie boy."
The woman slings the rifle over her shoulder by its strap.
"For if you're a-talkin' to a lady."
She squats down to Manchie's level.
"And who might ye be, pup?"
"Manchie!"
he barks.
"Oh, yeah, that's definitely who ye be, innit?"
says the woman, giving him a vigorous rubbin'.
"And ye two pups?"
she asks, not looking up.
"What might your good mothers have dubbed ye?"
Me and Viola exchange another glance. It seems like a price, giving up our names, but maybe it's a fair exchange for the gun being lowered.
"I'm Todd."
That's Viola.
"As surely true as the sun a-coming up,"
says the woman, having succeeded in getting Manchie on his back for a tummy rub. "Is there another way over that river?" I ask. "Another bridge? 'Cause those men..."
"I'm Matilde,"
the old woman interrupts.
"But people who call me that don't know me. So you can call me Hildy. And one day, you may even earn the right to shake my hand."
I look at Viola again. How can you tell if someone with no noise is crazy? The old woman cackles.
"You're a funny one there, boy."
She stands up from Manchie, who rolls back over and stares at her, already a worshiper.
"And to answer your asking, there's a shallow crossings a couple days traveling upstream, but there ain't no bridges for a good distance more either way."
She turns her gaze back to me, steady and clear, a small smile on her lips. She's got to be reading my noise again, but I can't feel no prodding like I do when men try it. And the way she keeps on looking, I start to realize a few things. I put a few things together. It must be right that Prentistown was quarantined 'cause of the noise germ, huh? 'Cause here's a grown-up woman who ain't dead from it, who's looking at me friendly, but keeping a distance. A woman ready to greet strangers from my direction with a rifle. And if I'm contagious, that means Viola's probably definitely caught it by now. Could be dying as we speak, and then I'm probably definitely not gonna be welcome in the settlement. Probably definitely gonna be told to keep way, way out, and that's probably the end of that, ain't it? My journey ended before I even found anywhere to go.
"Oh, ye won't be welcome in the settlement," the woman says. "No probably about it."
She winks at me, actually winks.
"But what ye don't know won't kill ye."
"Wanna bet?" I say. She turns back and steps up the rocks the way she came. We just watch her go till she gets to the top and turns around again.
"Ye all are coming?"
she says, as if she's invited us along and we're keeping her waiting. I look at Viola. She calls up to the woman.
"We're meant to be heading for the settlement."
Viola looks at me again.
"Welcome or not?"
"Oh, ye'll get there," says the woman. "But what ye two pups need first is a good sleepin' and a good feedin'. Any blind man could see that."
The idea of sleep and hot food is so tempting. I forget for a second that she ever pointed a gun at us, but only for a second. because there's other things to think about. I make the decision for us.
We should keep on the road,
I say to Viola quietly.
I don't even know where we're going,
she says, also quietly.
Do you? Honestly?
Ben said, Ye two pups come to my farm. Get some good eatin's in ye. Sleep on a bed, though it ain't soft, I'll grant ye that. And in the morning, we'll go to the settlement.
And that's how she says it, opening her eyes wide on it, like a word to make fun of us for calling it that. We still don't move.
Look at it thusly, the old woman says. I got me a gun.
She waves it.
But I'm asking ye to come.
Why don't we go with her?
Viola whispers.
Just to see.
My noise rises a little in surprise.
To see what? I could use a bath,
she says.
I could use some sleep.
So could I say. But there's men who are after us who probably ain't gonna let one fallen bridge stop them. And besides, we don't know nothing about her. She could be a killer for all we know.
She seems okay.
Viola glances up at the woman.
A little crazy, but she doesn't seem dangerous crazy.
She don't seem anything. I feel a little vexed, if I'm honest.
People without noise don't seem like nothing at all.
Viola looks at me, her brows suddenly creased and her jaw set a little.
Well, not you, obviously,
I say.
Every time.
She starts to say, but then she just shakes her head.
Every time what?
I whisper, but Viola just scrunches her eyes and turns to the woman.
Hold on,
she says, her voice sounding annoyed.
Let me get my stuff.
Hey, I say. What happened to her remembering I saved her life?
Wait a minute. We gotta follow the road. We gotta get to the settlement.
Roads is never the fastest way to get nowhere, the woman says. Don't ye know that?
Viola don't say nothing, just picks up her bag, frowning all over the place. She's ready to go, ready to head off with the first quiet person she sees, ready to leave me behind at the first sweet beckoning. And she's missing the thing I don't want to say.
I can't go, Viola,
I say low through clenched teeth, hating myself a little as I say it, my face turning hot, which weirdly makes a bandage fall off.
I carry the germ. I'm dangerous.
She turns to me, and there's a sting in her voice.
Then maybe you shouldn't come.
My jaw drops open.
You do that? You just leave?
Viola looks away from my eyes, but before she can answer, the old woman speaks.
Boy pup, she says, if it's being infectious you're worried about, then your girl mate can come a-walking up ahead with old Hildy while ye stay back a little ways with the pup-pup to guard ye.
Manchi!
Manchi barks.
Whatever,
Viola says, turning and starting to climb the rocks to where the old woman stands.
And I told ye, the woman says, it's Hildy, not old woman.
Viola reaches her and they walk off out of sight without another word, just like that.
Hildy,
Manchi says to me. Shut up, I say. And I don't got no choice but to climb the rocks after them, do I? So that's how we make our way along a much narrower path through rocks and scrub, Viola and old Hildy keeping close together when they can, me and Manchi miles back, tripping our way toward who knows what further danger, and the whole time I'm looking back over my shoulder, expecting to see the mayor and Mr. Prentice Jr. and Aaron all coming after us.
I don't know.
How can you know? How can Ben and Killian have expected me to be prepared for this? Sure, the idea of a bed and hot food sounds like something worth getting shot for, but maybe it's a trick, and maybe we're being so stupid we deserve to get caught. And there's people after us, and we should be running. But maybe there really ain't another way over the river. And Hildy could have forced us, and she didn't. And Viola says she seems okay, and maybe one noiseless person can read another. You see? How can you know? And who cares what Viola says? Look at 'em up there, I say to Manchie. They fell together pretty quick, like their long-lost family or something.
Hildy,
Manchie says again. I swat after his rump, but he runs on ahead. Viola and Hildy are talking together, but I can only hear the murmurings of words here and there. I don't know what they're saying at all. If they were normal, noisy people, it wouldn't matter how far back on the trail I was. We could all talk together, and nobody'd have no automatic secrets. Everybody'd be jabbering whether they wanted to or not. And nobody'd be left out. Nobody'd be left on his own at the first chance you had. We all walk on. And I'm starting to think some more. And I'm starting to let them get a little farther ahead, too. And I'm thinking more. 'Cause as time passes, it's all starting to sink in. 'Cause maybe now we've found Hildy. Maybe she can take care of Viola. They're clearly peas in a pod, ain't they? Different from me, anyway. And so maybe Hildy could help her get back to wherever she's from, 'cause obviously I can't. Obviously I ain't got nowhere I can be except Prentice Town, do I? 'Cause I'm carrying a germ that'll kill her. May kill her still. May kill everybody else I meet. A germ that'll forever keep me out of that settlement. That'll probably even leave me sleeping in Hildy's barn with the sheep and the russets. That's it, ain't it, Manchie? I stop walking, my chest starting to feel heavy. There ain't no noise out here, unless I'm the one who brings it. I rub some sweat off my forehead. We got nowhere to go. We can't go forward, we can't go back. I sit down on a rock, realizing the truth of it all. We got nowhere, I say. We got nothing.
Got Todd,
Manchie says, wagging his tail. It ain't fair. It just ain't fair. The only place you belong is the place you can never go back to. And so you're always alone, forever and always. Why'd you do it, Ben? What'd I do that was so bad? I wipe my eyes with my arm. I wish Aaron and the mayor would come and get me. I wish it would just be over already.
Todd,
Manchie barks, coming up to my face and trying to sniff it. Leave me alone, I say, pushing him away. Hildy and Viola are getting still farther away, and if I don't get up, I'll lose the trail. I don't get up. I can still hear them talking, though it gets steadily quieter. No one looking back to see if I'm still following.
Hildy,
I hear, and
girl pup,
and blasted leaky pipe, and
Hildy,
again, and
burning bridge.
And I lift my head, 'cause it's a new voice. And I ain't hearing it. Not with my ears. Hildy and Viola are getting farther away, but there's someone coming toward them, someone raising a hand in greeting. Someone whose noise is saying,
hello!
15. Brothers in Suffering. It's an old man, also carrying a rifle, but way down at his side, pointing to the ground. His noise rises as he approaches Hildy. It stays raised as he puts an arm around her and kisses her in greeting. It buzzes as he turns and is introduced to Viola, who stands back a little at being greeted so friendly. Hildy is married to a man with noise. A full-grown man. Walking around noisy as anything. But how...
Hey, boy pup!
Hildy shouts back at me.
Ye gonna sit there all day picking ye nose, or ye gonna join us for supper?
Supper, Todd!
Manchie barks and takes off running toward them. I don't think nothing. I don't know what to think.
Another noisy fella!
Shouts the old man, stepping past Viola and Hildy and coming toward me. He's got noise pouring out of him like a bright parade, all full of unwelcome welcome and pushy good feeling.
Boy pup!
And
bridges fallin',
and
leaky pipe,
and
brother in suffering,
and
Hildy my Hildy.
He's still carrying his rifle, but as he reaches me, his hand's out for me to shake. I'm so stunned that I actually shake it.
"Tam's my name," the old man more or less shouts. "And who might ye be, pup?"
"Todd," I say.
"Pleased to meet you, Todd."
He puts an arm around my shoulders and pretty much drags me forward up the path. I stumble along, barely keeping my balance, as he pulls us to Hildy and Viola, talking all the way.
"We haven't had guests for dinner in many a moon, so you'll have to be excusing our humble shack. Ain't been no travelers this-a-way for nigh on 10 years no more, but you're welcome. You're all welcome."
We get to the others, and I still don't know what to say, and I look from Hildy to Viola to Tam and back again. I just want the world to make sense now and then. Is that so wrong?
"Not wrong at all, Todd Pup," Hildy says kindly.
"How can you not have caught the noise?" I ask, words finally making their way out of my head via my mouth. Then my heart suddenly rises so high I can feel my eyes popping open and my throat starting to clench, my own noise coming all high, hopeful white. "Do you have a cure?" I say, my voice almost breaking. "Is there a cure?"
"Now if there were a cure," Tam says, still pretty much shouting, "do you honestly think I'd be subjecting you to all this here rubbish of floating out of my brain?"
"Heaven help ye if ye did," Hildy says, smiling.
"And heaven help ye if ye couldn't tell me what I was meant to be thinking."
Tam smiles back, love fuzzing all over his noise.
"Nope, boy pup," he says to me. "No cure that I know of."
"Well now," Hildy says, "Haven's meant to be a working on one, so people say."
"Which people?"
Tam asks, skeptical.
"Talia," Hildy says. "Susan F., my sister."
Tam makes a psht sound with his lips.
"I rest my case. Rumors of rumors of rumors. Can't trust your sister to get her own name right, much less any useful info."
"But," I say, looking back and forth again and again, not wanting to let it go.
"But how can you be alive then?" I say to Hildy. "The noise kills women. All women."
Hildy and Tam exchange a look and I hear, no, I feel Tam squash something in his noise.
"No, it don't, Todd Pup," Hildy says, a little too gently. "Like I've been telling your girl mate Viola here, she's safe."
"Safe? How can she be safe?"
"Women are immune," Tam says. "Lucky buggers."
"No, they're not," I say, my voice getting louder. "No, they're not. Every woman in Prentistown caught the noise, and every single one of them died from it. My ma died from it. Maybe the version the Spackle released on us was stronger than yours, but..."
"Todd Pup!"
Tam puts a hand on my shoulder to stop me. I shake him off, but I don't know what to say next. Viola hasn't said a word in all of this, so I look at her. She don't look at me.
"I know what I know,"
I say, even though that's been half the trouble, ain't it?
"How can this be true? How can this be true?"
Tam and Hildy exchange another glance. I look into Tam's noise, but he's as expert as anyone I've met at hiding stuff away when someone starts poking. What I see, though, is all kind.
"Prentistown's got a sad history, pup," he says. "A whole number of things went sour there."
"You're wrong,"
I say, but even my voice says I ain't sure what I'm saying he's wrong about.
"This ain't the place for it, Todd,"
Hildy says, rubbing Viola on the shoulder, a rub that Viola don't resist.
"You need to get some food in you, some sleep in you. Vi here says ye ain't slept hardly at all in many miles of traveling. Everything will be a-looking better when you're fed and rested."
"She's safe from me?"
I ask, making a point of not looking at Vi.
"Well, she's definitely safe from catching your noise," Hildy says, a smile breaking out. "What other safety she can get from ye is all down to a knowing ye better."
I want her to be right, but I also want to say she's wrong, and so I don't say nothing at all.
"Come on," Tam says, breaking the pause. "Let's get to some feasting."
"No,"
I say, remembering it all over again.
"We ain't got time for feasting."
I look at Viola.
"There's men after us, in case you forgot. Men who ain't interested in our well-beings."
I look up at Hildy.
"Now I'm sure your feastings would be fine and all."
"Todd, pup," Hildy starts.
"I ain't a pup,"
I shout. Hildy purses her lips and smiles with her eyebrows.
"Todd, pup,"
she says again, a little lower this time. "No man from any point beyond that river would ever set foot across it. Do ye understand?"
"Yep," says Tam. "That's right."
I look from one to the other.
"But..."
"I've been guardian here of that bridge for 10+ years, pup," Hildy says, "in keeper of it for years before that. It's part of who I am to watch what comes." She looks over to Viola. "No one's coming. Ye all are safe."
"Yep,"
Tam says again, rocking back and forth on his heels.
"But..."
I say again, but Hildy don't let me finish.
"Time for feasting."
And that's that, it seems. Viola still don't look at me, still has her arms crossed and is now under the arm of Hildy as they walk on again. I'm stuck back with Tam, who's waiting for me to start. I can't say as I feel much like walking anymore, but everyone else goes, so I go too. We carry on up Tam and Hildy's private little path, Tam chattering away, making enough noise for a whole town.
"Hildy says you blew up our bridge,"
he says.
"My bridge,"
Hildy says, from in front of us.
"She did build it,"
Tam says to me.
"Not that anyone's used it in forever."
"No one?" I say, thinking for a second of all those men who disappeared at Apprentice Town, all the ones who vanished while I was growing up. Not one of them got this far.
"Nice bit of engineering that bridge was,"
Tam's going on like he didn't hear me, and maybe he didn't, what with how loud he's talking.
"Sad to hear it's gone."
"We had no choice," I say.
"Oh, there's always choices, pup, but from what I hear, you made the right one."
We walk on quietly for a bit.
"You're sure we're safe?"
I ask.
"Well, ye can't never be sure," he says. "But Hildy's right."
He grins, a little sadly, I think.
"There's more than bridges being out that'll keep men that side of the river."
I try and read his noise to see if he's telling the truth, but it's almost all shiny and clean, a bright, warm place where anything you want could be true. Nothing at all like Apprentice Town, man.
"I don't understand this," I say, still gnawing on it. "It's got to be a different kind of noise, Germ."
"My noise sounds different from yours?"
Tam asks, seeming genuinely curious. I look at him and just listen for a second.
"Hildy,"
and
"Prentice Town," and "Russets and Sheep,"
and
"Settlers,"
and
"Leaky Pipe,"
and
"Hildy."
"You sure think about your wife a lot."
"She's my shining star, pup. Would have lost myself in noise if she hadn't have put a hand out to rescue me."
"How so?" I ask, wondering what he's talking about. "Did you fight in the war?" This stops him. His noise goes as gray and featureless as a cloudy day, and I can't read a thing off him.
"I fought, young pup," he says, "but war's not something you talk about in the open air when the sun is shining."
"Why not?"
"I pray to all my gods ye never find out."
He puts a hand on my shoulder. I don't shake it off this time.
How do you do that?
I asked. Do what?
Make your noise so flat I can't read it.
He smiles. Years of practice of hiding things from the old woman.
It's why I can read so good,
Hildy calls back to us.
He gets better at hiding. I get better at finding.
They laugh together yet again. I find myself trying to send an eye roll Viola's way about these two, but Viola ain't looking at me, and I stop myself from trying again. We all come out of the rocky part of the path and around a low rise, and suddenly there's a farm ahead of us, rolling up and down little hills, but you can see fields of wheat, fields of cabbage, a field of grass with a few sheep on it.
Hello, sheep!
Tam shouts.
Sheep!
Say the sheep. First on the path is a big wooden barn, built as watertight and solid as the bridge, like it could last there forever if anyone asked it.
Unless ye go a-blowin' it up, Hildy says, laughing still. Like to see you try,
Tam laughs back. I'm getting a little tired of 'em laughing about every damn thing. Then we come around to the farmhouse, which is a totally different thing altogether. Metal, by the looks of it. Like the gas station and the church back home, but not nearly so banged up. Half of it shines and rolls on up to the sky like a sail, and there's a chimney that curves up and out, folding down to a point, smoke coughing from its end. The other half of the house is wood built onto the metal, solid as the barn, but cut and folded like...
Wings, I say.
Wings is right, Tam says. And what kind of wings are they?
I look again. The whole farmhouse looks like some kind of bird with the chimney as its head and neck, and a shiny front and wooden wings stretched out behind like a bird resting on the water or something.
It's a swan, Todd Pup,
Tam says.
A what?
A swan.
What's a swan? I say, still looking at the house. His noise is puzzled for a second. Then I get a little pulse of sadness, so I look at him.
What?
Nothing, pup, he says. Memories of long ago.
Viola and Hildy are up ahead still, Viola's eyes wide and her mouth gulping like a fish.
What did I tell you?
Hildy asks. Viola rushes up to the fence in front of the house. She stares at it, looking all over the metal part, up and down, side to side. I come up by her and look, too. It's hard for a minute to think of anything to say.
Shut up.
Supposed to be a swan, I finally say.
Whatever that is.
She ignores me and turns to Hildy.
Is it an expansion 3500?
What? Older than that, Vi Pup,
Hildy says.
X3200.
We got up to X7s.
Viola says.
Not surprised, says Hildy.
What the ruddy hell are you talking about?
I say. Expansion what's it?
Sheep!
We hear Manchi bark in the distance.
Our settler ship,
Hildy says, sounding surprised that I don't know. An expansion class 3 series 200. I look from face to face. Tam's noise has a spaceship flying in it. One with a front hull that matches the upturned farmhouse.
Oh, yeah,
I say, remembering, trying to say it like I knew all along.
You build your houses with the first tools at hand.
Quite so, pup,
Tam says.
Or you make them works of art if you're so inclined. If your wife is an engineer who can get your damn fool sculptures to stay standing up.
Hildy says.
How do you know about all this?
I say to Viola. She looks at the ground, away from my eyes.
You don't mean...
I start to say, but I stop.
I'm getting it.
Of course I'm getting it. Way too late like everything else, but I'm getting it.
You're a settler,
I say.
You're a new settler.
She looks away from me, but shrugs her shoulders.
But that ship you crashed in, I say.
That's way too tiny to be a settler ship.
That was only a scout. My home ship is an expansion class 7.
She looks at Hildy and Tam, who ain't saying nothing. Tam's noise is bright and curious. I can't read nothing from Hildy. I get the feeling somehow, though, that she knew, and I didn't. That Viola told her and not me, and even if it's 'cause I never asked, it's still as sour a feeling as it sounds. I look up at the sky.
It's up there, ain't it? I say. Your expansion class 7.
Viola nods.
You're bringing more settlers in. More settlers are coming to New World.
Everything was broken when we crashed, Viola says. I don't have any way to contact them. Any way to warn them not to come.
She looks up with a little gasp.
You must warn them.
That can't be what he meant, I say fast. No way!
Viola scrunches her face and eyebrows.
Why not?
What who meant?
Tam asks.
How many?
I ask, still looking at Viola, feeling the world changing forever again.
How many settlers are coming?
Viola takes a deep breath before she answers, and I'll bet you she's not even told Hildy this part.
Thousands, she says. There's thousands.
16. The Night of No Apologies.
They won't be a-getting here for months,
Hildy says, passing me another serving of mashed russets. Viola and I are stuffing our faces so much it's been Hildy and Tam doing all the talking. All the talking.
Space travel ain't like you see it in vids,
Tam says, a stream of mutton gravy tracking down his beard.
Takes years and years and years to get anywhere at all. 64 to get from Old World to New World alone.
64 years?
I say, spraying a few mashed blobs off my lips. Tam nods.
You're frozen for most of it. Time passing you right on by, though that's only if you don't die on the way.
I turn to Viola.
You're 64 years old?
64 old world years,
Tam says, tapping his fingers like he's adding something up.
Which would be, what, about 58? 59 New World?
But Viola's shaking her head.
I was born on board. Never was asleep.
So either your ma or your pa must have been a caretaker,
Hildy says, snapping off a bite of a turnipy thing, then giving me an explanation.
One of the ones who stays awake and keeps track of the ship.
Both of them were, Viola says, and my dad's mother before him, and granddad before that.
Wait a minute, I say to her, two steps behind as ever.
So, if we've been on New World 20-odd years...
23, says Tam. Feels like longer.
Then you left before we even got here, I say.
Or your pa or grandpa or whatever.
I look around to see if anyone's wondering what I'm wondering.
Why?
I say.
Why would you come without even knowing what's out here?
Why did the first settlers come?
Hildy asks me.
Why does anyone look for a new place to live? 'Cause the place you're a-leaving ain't worth staying for,
Tam says.
'Cause the place you're a-leaving is so bad, ye gotta leave.
Old World's mucky, violent, and crowded,
Hildy says, wiping her face with a napkin.
A-splitting right into bits with people a-hating each other and a-killing each other, no one happy till everyone's miserable. Least it was all those years ago.
I wouldn't know, Viola says. I've never seen it. My mother and father...
She drifts off. But I'm still thinking about being born on a spaceship. An honest-to-badness spaceship. Growing up while flying along the stars, able to go wherever you wanted. Not stuck on some hateful planet which clearly don't want you.
You could go anywhere. If one place didn't suit, you'd find another. Full freedom in all directions. Could there possibly be anything cooler in the whole world than that? I don't notice that there's a silence falling at the table. Hildy is rubbing Viola's back again, and I see that Viola's eyes are wet and leaking, and she's started to rock a little back and forth. What? I say. What's wrong now? Viola's forehead just creases at me. What? I say. I think maybe we talked enough about Vi's ma and pa for now, Hildy says softly. I think maybe it's time for boy and girl pups to get some shut-eye. But it's hardly late at all. I look out a window. The sun ain't even hardly set. We need to be getting to the settlement. The settlement is called Far Branch, Hildy says. And we'll get you there first thing in the morning. But those men... I've been a-keeping the peace here since before you were born, pup, Hildy says, kindly but firmly. I can handle whatever is or ain't a-coming. I don't say nothing to this, and Hildy ignores my noise on the subject.
Can I ask what your business in Far Branch might be?
Tam says, picking at his corn cob, making his asking sound less curious than his noise says it is. We just need to get there, I say.
Both of ye?
I look at Viola. She stopped crying, but her face is still puffy. I don't answer Tam's asking.
Well, there's plenty of work going, Hildy says, standing and taking up her plate. If that's what you're after, they can always use more hands in the orchards.
Tam stands and they clear the table, taking the dishes into their kitchen and leaving me and Viola sitting there by ourselves. We can hear them chatting in there, lightly enough and noise blocked enough for us not to be able to make it out.
Do you really think we ought to stay the whole night? I say, keeping my voice low.
But she answers in a violent whisper, like I didn't even send out an asking.
Just because my thoughts and feelings don't spill out into the world in a shout that never stops doesn't mean I don't have them.
I turn to her, surprised.
Huh?
She keeps whispering something fierce.
Every time you think, oh, she's just emptiness, or there's nothing going on inside her, or maybe I can dump her with these two, I hear it, okay? I hear every stupid thing you think, all right? And I understand way more than I want to.
Oh, yeah?
I whisper back, though my noise ain't a whisper at all.
Every time you think something, or feel something, or have some stupid thought, I don't hear it. So how am I supposed to know any effing thing about you, huh? How am I supposed to know what's going on if you keep it a secret? I'm not keeping it secret.
She's clenching her teeth now.
I'm being normal.
Not normal for here, Vi.
And how would you know? I can hear you being surprised by just about everything they say. Didn't they have a school where you were from? Didn't you learn anything?
History ain't so important when you're just trying to survive, I say, spitting it out under my breath. That's actually when it's most important, Hildy says, standing at the end of the table. And if this silly argument twixt ye two ain't enough to prove you're tired, then you're tired beyond all sense. Come on.
Viola and I glare at each other, but we get up and follow Hildy into a large common room.
Todd!
Manchi barks from a corner, not getting up from the mutton bone Tam gave him earlier.
We've long since took over our guest rooms for other purposes, Hildy says. You'll have to make do on the settees.
We help her put down sheets, Viola still scowling, my noise a buzzy red.
Now, Hildy says when we're all done, apologize to each other.
What?
Viola says.
Why?
I don't see how this is any of your business, I say.
Never go to sleep on an argument, Hildy says, hands on hips, looking like she ain't never gonna budge and would be pleased to see someone try and make her.
Not if ye want to stay friends.
Viola and I don't say nothing.
He saved your life, Hildy says to Viola.
Viola looks down before finally saying,
Yeah.
"That's right, I did," I say. "And she saved yours at the bridge, didn't she?" Hildy says.
"Oh."